Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for March 29th, 2018. On today's show, we're going to tell you all about the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film senior writer Ben Pearson, and joining me today is Slash Film managing editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
And writer Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
How's it going, guys? All right, so let's dive into the news today. Oh, we got a cat joining us. Is that right? Jacob, is that you?
I don't know. He's on my lap. I didn't hear him meow except through my headphones, so it's a phantom cat.
I love it. Adds a little color to the podcast. We're keeping this in there. All right, cool. So, Chris, let's talk about Wonder Woman 2. A new actor has been added to the cast. This happened right after we finished recording yesterday's podcast. Who is now the newest member of Wonder Woman 2's cast?
Pedro Pascal, who was in Game of Thrones, and he was, in my opinion, the one redeeming factor of that terrible Kingsman sequel, has joined the cast in an undisclosed role. So we don't really know who he's playing yet, but he's the latest addition to the cast. Recently, Kristen Wiig was also recently cast as the film's villain. So the film is slowly coming together.
I really liked the first Kingsman, and just, I think it was like last week, I missed Kingsman 2 in theaters, but last week I tried to watch the second one and got like, I think 15 minutes in before I had to turn it off. And I almost never do that. It was just like irredeemable, I thought. But I'm glad to hear that Pedro Pascal at least was enjoyable in that movie.
Yeah, that movie, for some reason, Kingsman 2 is 7 hours long, and he's the only good part of those 7 hours.
So we don't know anything about the character he's playing at all? Like, no hints or anything? That's sort of rare for a superhero property like this.
Yeah, just said when the story broke, Variety had the exclusive, and they said, you know, there's no real details on who he's playing yet. So everyone can feel free to speculate wildly about who he could play.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, with no guidelines whatsoever, it's almost impossible to speculate other than, like, he's playing a human male. But I guess even that, with Wonder Woman, like, the idea that gods can factor in, that's not even necessarily a given in this case either. But, Jacob, do you have any theories? I know you read comics here and there.
Wonder Woman doesn't really have a massive lineup of memorable villains outside of Ares and Cheetah, who are already being used, Cheetah being played by Kristen Wiig in Wonder Woman 2. So I don't even know. I have no idea. I like Pascal a lot. Liked him in Game of Thrones. I just saw him in a movie at South by Southwest called Prospect, which he was very, very good in. So this is good news. Whether he's a villain or an ally or whatever he is, I'm happy to see more Pascal. And he joins, for me, a random side note. He's like Lee Pace in that he's an actor who's American, but you look at him and like, and you think, there's no way you're actually American, but he actually is American, and it drives me crazy.
his Yeah, and the country of origin being a mystery just sort of adds to his whole like enigmatic persona. He can blend into roles that way. It works out really well for him.
Yeah, you have two Americans on Game of Thrones, and most people did not realize he was American. So I'm just saying, this guy can be literally playing anybody.
So let's talk about a non-American, a Kiwi director, Taika Waititi. His next film is called Jojo Rabbit, and that movie has also found a new star. Jacob, who's that?
That star is Scarlett Johansson, which means this is a weird sort of Marvel reunion between Taika Waititi, who did Thor Ragnarok, and Scarlett Johansson, who plays Black Widow in a bunch of the Marvel movies. But this is very much not a Marvel movie. This is a comedy drama set in Nazi Germany during World War II, but a young boy who, growing up in a fascist regime, imagines his own imaginary version of Hitler to be his new best friend, as he learns that his mother, played by Johansson, is hiding a Jewish girl in their house. So this is such a far-out concept.
What?
Yeah. Have you not heard this premise before?
No, I have not.
Oh, and also the imaginary Hitler is played by Taika Waititi himself.
Wow. Is he doing mocap as Hitler, or is he just going to be like normal, jovial Taika Waititi, but with a tiny mustache?
I think he's just a jovial Taika Waititi. I think the joke here is that this kid growing up around propaganda does not realize Hitler's a monster, so his imaginary Hitler is like the best buddy he never had, and he slowly starts to realize, oh no, maybe my imaginary best friend is based on somebody who's actually horrible, and that's the thrust of the movie. And I love that he's using his Thor Ragnarok clout to get this made. He wrote the screenplay about 6 years ago, where it was on the blacklist of best unproduced screenplays for 2012. So he's had this in his back pocket for a while. And Johansson's a good actress, I think, with the right director. Put her in the wrong role and she's bad, but put her in the right role with the right people backing her up and she's really good. She's one of those people, she's dependent on the people around her. And with this premise, that director, I'm really curious to see how this plays out, because as we all know, Holocaust comedies are rough. They usually do not work, but I have faith in Taika here.
Chris, what do you think about this one?
I very much want to see this. I had heard about the premise because I wrote a story about this a little while ago. And yeah, this just sounds wild. And I feel like if anyone else were making it, I would be hesitant about it. But since it's him, I'm very curious to see what he does.
Yeah, that sounds totally nuts in maybe a really, really good way. I mean, the idea of like making a Nazi a sympathetic figure in any way is slightly troubling in today's political climate, but I trust Taika Waititi, and I feel like he probably knows what he's doing here. Jacob, did you mention that is this an original concept, or is this based on something?
As far as I know, it's original. I think it's a pure jolt of Taika Waititi ripped right from his veins.
Okay. It definitely sounds out there, so I would not be surprised if it came straight from some bizarre dream he had or something. But yeah, I'm also looking forward to checking this one out. So something I think all of us are probably not looking forward to is Sharknado 6. That movie has just been announced by Sci-Fi, and it is actually going to end the franchise. This is going to be the last film in the Sharknado series. And, of course, the final movie, they're going out with a bang. They're incorporating time travel into this thing. So our own Ethan Anderton, a.k.a. Brad Oman, wrote this article for SlashFilm.com. You can read more about this movie there, but I'm going to read you guys the plot synopsis of Sharknado 6. All is lost, or is it? Finn, who is the character who's played by Ian Ziering, unlocks the time-traveling power of the Sharknados in order to save the world and resurrect his family. In his quest, Finn fights Nazis, dinosaurs, knights, and even takes a ride on Noah's Ark. This time, it's not how to stop the Sharknados, it's when. So, yeah, that sounds really, really ridiculous. It sort of reminds me a little bit of Kung Fury in a way, where they're just, like, taking the whole kitchen sink approach to the thing. I'm honestly surprised they haven't really gone, you know, and they haven't covered this ground already in the Sharknado franchise. I tuned in briefly. I've probably seen like 5 minutes of the first movie and then have just absorbed this entire franchise through osmosis on Twitter and through articles that we've written about it on the site. So I've never actually seen any of these movies in their entirety. Have either of you dabbled in the Sharknado franchise at all, Jacob?
I have slightly, and I'll explain to you why I hate this series with a passion. It goes beyond just being, oh, those movies are crappy. Ha ha, they're crappy. Look how garbage they are. And it goes toward the fact that they're intentionally made crappy. It feels like the makers don't understand the reason people latch on to bad movies, the reason people join cults around movies that are so bad they're good. It's because the greatest so bad they're good movies are the films that are made by actual artists who have something to say. Like the classic example is Ed Wood, whose movies are political and sexual and driven by such focus and ideas. And he was a filmmaker who really had something to say. So his vision, as bad as it was, is powered by something really personal. And even like all these crass and bad movies from the 60s, 70s, 80s, even the worst ones of them have the veneer of being made to appeal to an audience or being made to get somebody to pay to watch them. Whereas Sharknado was like intentionally derailing a train. It's like it's intentionally a bad movie. It does not understand the joy that people take out of these bad movies. And its fan base is entirely ironic hipsters who do not understand why people would embrace bad movies that are actually artistically interesting.
Yeah.
So it's such a naked, ugly, stupid, vile thing. And I really hope it's gone forever.
Yeah, I think you raised a pretty good point there. Chris, have you ever checked out any of these films?
No, but I agree with pretty much everything Jacob said. What makes good, quote-unquote, good bad movies so good is they're made in earnest. Like, they're made by people who are trying really hard, and they fail, but they're really trying. Like, if you set out to just make a bad movie, that's just, like, cheap to me. Like, that just seems like you're cheating in a way. Like, I'd rather watch a bad movie that's trying to be good rather than a movie that just wants to be bad. So I'm happy this franchise is coming to an end.
Yeah, and like the idea of dinosaurs and Nazis and stuff, that just sort of seems like so played out, doesn't it? Even for something as kitschy as this, like that's just sort of like it's the go-to thing when you're talking about like, oh, ridiculous, you know, crazy time travel, dinosaurs and Nazis, blah. I don't know, it strikes me as like remarkably unimaginative, even in a franchise that is remarkably unimaginative. All right, so let's move on to our next topic, and that is the Deadwood movie. HBO has been going back and forth on this. We've heard so many conflicting reports over the years, but the latest one seems to indicate that the movie is not going to happen. Chris, tell us what's going on.
Timothy Oliphant is doing promotion right now for Santa Clarita Diet. And during that promotional tour, the Deadwood movie came up. Deadwood was an HBO series. It was great. It lasted 3 seasons. And even though it was critically acclaimed, the ratings just weren't really there to make it sustainable for HBO. So they canceled it. Ever since it's been canceled, David Milch, the creator, has been kicking around this idea of making a movie. Originally, it was going to be 2 movies that would wrap up, the storyline. Eventually, he settled on 1 movie, and for a while, it sounded like it was just dead. It wasn't going to happen. Then, in late 2016, word came that it actually might really happen. And all through 2017, we kept hearing reports that HBO really wants to make this happen. They really want to make the movie happen. David Milch wrote the script. It's moving on the fast track. But now Timothy Oliphant, during this interview, said basically there's no chance it's going to happen. And his reasoning seems to be it's just going to be hard to get the cast all together again. At the same time, Entertainment Weekly reached out to HBO to get them to comment. And HBO says they're still very committed to making this happen. So this is sort of like a he said thing where Timothy Oliphant thinks it's not going to happen. HBO says they really want it to happen. We don't really know what's going on. I hope it happens because I was a huge Deadwood fan and I would love to see, you know, this movie become a reality, but I guess we'll see.
Jacob, do you think Deadwood needs a movie?
I think it needs one. I think the season 3 finale is a really great season finale. It doesn't quite function as a series finale. And I think it's in HBO's best interest to make this happen because they've said in the years since that if they had known how well Deadwood would have performed on DVD, they would have finished it. It would have made another season or would have made the movies. And the same thing applies now, even if we're phasing toward, you know, streaming, because if someone goes to Deadwood on HBO Go or HBO Now and sees 3 seasons, doesn't see an ending, are they going to watch that? Are they going to stick around and pay their subscription? Are they going to want to watch an unfinished show? So by having a movie to cap off the series available for streaming in the library, it just gives people another reason to check out more shows and to dive into more things and keep on paying that monthly subscription. And it's why Hello Ladies, a show that didn't really get watched, got a TV movie wrap-up, because now people can go to that section on HBO and say, oh, this show only has one season, but it has an ending. I'm going to watch it. So I think that's going to happen. I think it's going to take a lot of effort, but I think HBO understands the power of having that complete library.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because it, I personally think it's a good point because it actually applies to me. I have heard good things about Deadwood. I've been hearing, you know, rave reviews about it for years, and I dove into it fairly recently and watched the first season and a half, and then, I don't know, something about season two, it didn't strike me as much as the first season, so I sort of fell off on it. Would you guys recommend me jumping back on and finishing that up, even if this movie doesn't happen? Because that's part of the reason I think why I've been reluctant to go back to it, was I knew that it, you know, it was one of those shows where it ended before its time and didn't really have a satisfying conclusion. Do you think that the journey is worth it, even if this movie ends up not happening?
I definitely do. Season three is very, very good. There's some really great stuff in it, and like Jacob said, it ends on an okay note. It ends in a way that if it has to be the finale, it's okay, but I'd like there to be more. But so let's just say if it is, like, if season three is the end of it all, you won't go away disappointed. You'll want more, but you won't be like, ah, man, I can't believe that's it. Like, it's not like a cliffhanger. So I would recommend finishing it up.
Cool. And Hello Ladies, which Jacob mentioned, is a really great and underseen show. I feel like nobody really talks about that, but I watched that when it was on, and I was really happy to see the movie that wrapped it up, and I think it's a satisfying, funny show. So if you've never heard of that one and are looking for a breezy new comedy to check out, I would definitely recommend seeking out Hello Ladies. So let's talk about, for the back half of this podcast, one of HBO's new flagship shows, I guess you would call it, and that is Westworld. A new season 2 trailer debuted this morning, and Jacob, you wrote about this briefly on the site, and actually all three of us have written articles about it today, but let's talk about what we think about this trailer. Jacob, let's start with you.
First, I think we should do an overall spoiler warning. If you haven't seen season 1, we're going to be talking about things that have happened. This trailer does not try to hide what's happening in the immediate aftermath of season 1. So just consider this a spoiler warning. If you haven't seen the first 10 episodes and plan to watch them, this is your chance to get out. You really should watch it. It's a hell of a show.
Yes, good point. All right, so spoilers. Potential spoilers starting now.
This is a crazy trailer. It's everything in this trailer is bowled me over. There's so much incredible imagery. The budget looks so much bigger. It seems to have leaning much heavier on the hard sci-fi. Now the cat's fully out of the bag with what Westworld is, and everybody in the world that knows what it is, both robots and humans. And it's reached the point, it's actually reached the hook of the original Westworld movie, which was humans and robots fighting, whereas the original movie was humans being slaughtered by merciless robots. This is a righteous war between robots who have every reason to kill every human they can see. And that's my favorite part of the trailer, actually, is seeing how Delos, the company behind Westworld, is fully mobilized against the Android uprising. There are soldiers, there are boats, there are jeeps with machine guns. It's an all-out war thing. I love the imagery of these future soldiers fighting against robots dressed like Confederate soldiers at a old army fort. It's just this clash of visuals that like just strikes my imagination in a way the show always has, the way it's always explored how theme parks work, how video games work, how interactive narrative works. But now it's said, okay, we did all that in season one. What happens when the people in this story, the people who've been programmed to follow these routes, learn what's going on and don't want to follow it anymore? And that's so thrilling. And Chris, I know you also had a big reaction to this trailer.
Yeah, I was a fan of the first season, but this trailer looks like it blows everything from the first season out of the water. It just looks insanely big. Like, it's bigger in almost every single way imaginable. It just looks bigger and more epic. You know, I know some of it's misleading because a lot of it is like quick shots, and, you know, there's going to be a whole lot more story that we don't know about. But I was already excited for this, but this trailer has me even more excited. Like, I want to see this now, like right this minute.
Yeah, I'm also, so I appreciated the first season, but I was also one of those people who was pretty annoyed with the way that it decided to dole out its information. I thought it played everything a little too close to the vest and got a little too cute with the reveals and the time, you know, the way it played with time. And I wish it would have been a little bit more straightforward. I think the second season is probably going to not necessarily make me happy in that regard, but I have to admit that I'm very intrigued by what I see in this trailer, and even sort of having a better picture of what the show is from having seen its entire first season, I think I won't be as annoyed with it, because there was the thing about the first season was you had to wait until the very end to have your suspicions confirmed. And now that those suspicions are confirmed about the way that, you know, some part of the show took place in this part of the timeline, other parts took place on this part, now you sort of know what the what's on the table. And now I feel like I'm going to be better equipped to handle whatever they do in the second season, which, as you guys have mentioned, looks way bigger and far more intense than what we've seen the first time around. I think it was Evan Rachel Wood, who plays Dolores, the lead of the show, said that the first season essentially serves as like the pilot for what the show is going to be. And now that that is out of the way, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do, at, you know, in the quote unquote real show as it moves forward. Chris, I know that in this trailer there is a secret video, a hidden video. Tell us about that.
Yes, so the Westworld viral marketing is going overboard, I think. But this is fun stuff if you're into it. There's like a secret video code hidden within the trailer, and thankfully someone on Reddit cracked this, because I never would have been able to do it myself. But in the secret video, it acts as a marketing ad for Westworld, but there are all these like quick flashes of disturbing images, and there's a few new characters. Like we see the head of how's it pronounced? Delios or Delos? Does anyone know?
Delos.
Yeah,
Delos. Delos. Yeah. So we see like the head of Delos. There's a quick shot of him carving his face up in a mirror. So that's instantly a red flag about that character. There's just all sorts of disturbing imagery buried within this video. And then at the end of this video, there's another code which takes you to yet another viral website, which then takes you to yet another video, which is all about Dolores's father from the first season, who was the first sort of robot to start malfunctioning. And at one point that robot got his mind wiped, and Tessa Thompson's character installed all this data into his wiped mind and then gave instructions to get that character out of Westworld. So I'm sure that'll all come up again in season two. So it's basically just, it's one thing leading to another with this viral marketing.
Yeah, we've heard a lot about how there are going to be 6 total parks within the Delos umbrella, under the Delos umbrella, I guess. And Westworld is one of them. Shogun World is another one. And we see, actually, it takes like a full 2 minutes in this trailer before we get to Shogun World. But once that happens, we see a shot of Maeve, who's Tandy Newton's character. I think she's the only named character that we recognize from the first season that we see in this trailer that has made it into Shogun World. Jacob, do you have any theories or thoughts about what she could be doing there?
My pet theory is that we're going to see cowboy robots venture into Shogun World to try to convince the samurai robot to join forces against the future humans, which is a sentence I never thought I'd say. I'm so happy. Thank you, HBO. So I know that Teddy Newton's character, Maeve, is on his personal mission, but I'm wondering if there's anybody out there who's going to be sort of a warrior for the robot cause, for the uprising, who's going to be passionate enough to go into a literal different world, stare down a bunch of people from other robots from a different society, and say, hey, join us in this fight. I think it's going to be her. And I don't know where it's going to go. I know that we haven't mentioned yet that Rinko Kikuchi from Pacific Rim and Babel has joined the cast, and she's seen in the trailer as a geisha in Shogun World. So it's another case where we're going to see more interesting and named characters on this side of the park as well. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I like the idea of Maeve as sort of an emissary or something like that, sent by Dolores. We know that she is on a quest to find her daughter, but like, what happens after that? Or does she abandon that quest? We don't really know. That's essentially the only thing we know about her character arc this season. So that could happen very, you know, relatively quickly. And then we know that in this trailer, we see her having a little confrontation with Dolores and Teddy. So maybe she ends up teaming up with them and then, yeah, becomes their sort of person who's like doing reconnaissance in a different world, or yeah, trying to recruit the Shogun hosts to rise up against their human creators as well. Chris, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, that sounds like the most plausible thing. I wonder if like every season now is going to end with them introducing yet another world. Like at the end of last season, we got the hint about Shogun World. Now I'm just wondering if they're going to keep that going until, you know, they get through six seasons and we've revealed them all, but I guess we'll see.
That would be pretty cool and a good way to structure things, because you probably don't, I mean, very, very rarely does any show deserve to go longer than six seasons, I think. So that might be a good way for them to put a satisfying end on this whole thing, or at least think about it in those terms. I wrote an in-depth trailer breakdown. I spent like, I don't even want to say how many hours I spent going through frame by frame all this footage. But one theory that I wanted to mention really quickly was, at one point in the trailer, we see Dolores looking out over a cityscape. And, you know, I've seen some theories that, like, maybe this is, like, a future world or something like that. This is not, like, the quote-unquote real world. This is just a separate theme park under the Delos umbrella. But I'm wondering if we might actually be seeing a woman who is not Dolores, but is the inspiration for Dolores. And this could be like a super flashback, because we know that Anthony Hopkins is not coming back to play the role of Robert Ford, which he played in the first season. But we do know that that character is going to be seen in season two, played by a younger actor. So my theory is maybe Dolores looking out over the city is actually part of the young Robert Ford storyline, and he just meets this woman and then uses her as the inspiration for creating Dolores, who's like one of the first hosts that is created in the park. Do you guys find does that sound remotely plausible to you?
It does, but I also wonder, since Dolores is the oldest host in the park, if maybe Robert Ford smuggled her out of the park for some reason, became infatuated with her, and that kind of sets all the events in motion that as everything tumbles down years later.
Yeah, that's interesting. Chris?
I do like that theory. I think that is very plausible, but I feel like I said, with this trailer, it's like tailor-made to misdirect you, in that I'm sure that everyone has like a million theories right now based on it, and then we're going to find out they're all wrong, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I look forward to listening back to this after season two is over and just laughing about how wrong I was. But Westworld season two premieres on April 22nd on HBO, so look forward to that. And I think that's pretty much going to bring us to the end of today's episode of Slash Film Daily. Guys, where can people find more of your work online? Jacob, let's start with you.
I am on slashfilm.com every single day, and on Twitter, where I'm at Jacob S. Hall.
And Chris?
I'm also on Slash Film. I'm on Twitter at cevangelist413. And I did this already, but I'm going to do it again. I have a very big piece up on the 21st century films of Steven Spielberg. Please go seek that out on slashfilm.com and read it, because it's the first in a series, and I want you all to read it. Thank you.
Yes, definitely do that, and I will put that piece in the show notes for this episode again. So if you're just listening to this on your phone or whatever, just check out the show notes and click, you know, right where you are. You don't even have to do any work to find that article, but it's definitely worth your time. Definitely check it out. You can find me on slashfilm.com as well, including this really ridiculous season two Westworld trailer breakdown that I wrote this morning. And you can find me on Twitter at Ben Pears. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find at the site. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please feel free to send your feedback, questions, comments, and concerns to us at peter@slashfilm.com, and be sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends, spread the word about the show, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.